Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lafondra looking to get cross-side of Font. Lafondra away from David. 3-1 running. 3 points running.
Hello and welcome to the Elm Park Rolls podcast, supported by Blue Collar Street Food. Well, that was a weird old game yesterday, wasn't it? Ultimately, frustration for Reading, giving away a 3-1 lead and ending up with a 3-all against Queen's Park Rangers. Clearly the biggest club in London, at least that's what they think they are. To help me talk it through it, I've been joined by Matt Lansley. Hi, Matt.
Morning, Paul. How are you doing?
Kind of still living off the vibes of Raducanu winning the US Open last night. Let's forget about Reading FC there for 1 second. But I've also been joined by Alex Everson. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Paul.
So that was, I don't know really what to think about that game. If you just looked at it as a neutral, you would have absolutely loved that game. There was calamitous defending from both teams, loads of goals, loads of chances, but ultimately we come away from it, finished 22nd in the league. We've got the worst defensive record in the whole of the championship, but we've also got one of the best attacking records for goals in the championship. What's your mood at the moment there, Matt, about Reading Football Club?
I don't think anyone really knows what to think. I think the underlining factor is just how poor defensively we are, because I think it's either the fourth or the fifth best attack in the league, but you know, we've scored 10 goals and we're in six games and we're sat in 22nd, you know, and it's like, it's almost getting to the point where we don't need, like the old adage is that you need three goals to win a game. Well, we don't need three. We need four or five to win a game at this rate, you know, with the rate of which we're conceding, and like the quality of the calamitous defending that we're doing is just amazing. So, you know, it's just, something needs to happen with the defense, and we'll touch on it, but it's a debacle at the moment, the defending.
It's absolutely horrendous, isn't it? We look at the changes that we saw yesterday. We saw a Reading debut for Berber Rahman. Alan Halovic also comes in for his first start. Those are two changes that you had to be happy when you saw them there, Alex.
Yeah, Halovic played it quite well when he came on against Huddersfield. So I don't really think that one was a massive surprise that he started. And I mean, we didn't really have a choice but to start with Babaram and it left back, given that there is no other left back at the club. The kind of exclusion, I guess, of Scott Dann and Danny Drinkwater completely from the squad was a little surprising. I read before the game that they were injured. I hadn't seen any updates since then. I haven't really gone looking for one, but that was a little disappointing that they were already not available for the first
I saw
game.
That pre-game, and you've got to just wonder, like, I saw one comment, I think it was on the Jonathan Lowe tweet, just like asking, like, are they reenacting the Hunger Games or something in training? They must be, because, like, how can Scott Dan and Drinkwater already be injured? Like, I don't know if that I can't remember if Paunovic touched on it after the game, but if they're already injured, Jesus.
Is it a matter of not fit enough rather than actually injured? I'm not quite sure. I mean,
Drinkwater played all pre-season for Chelsea, so you'd have to hope it's not that. The only other change which was exciting, at least, was Ajaria back in the side. That was really pleasing to see, because I didn't really expect him to start yesterday, so it was good to see him kind of come straight back into the starting lineup. And then Rinomota's injured as well, so that injury list just keeps getting ever longer.
Yes, the injuries, I don't know what it is that they've got at the training ground. There must be some kind of black hole. The players just go down, and then you have three options. One is a 7 month off, or you could get 2 or 3 months, or you will be fine. Just who knows? It's the randomizer. What we'll find out probably against Peterborough before the match, there will be a new injury. We don't know who it will be yet, but there will be someone who has got struck down by the Bearwood. I'm trying to think of something.
Curse. The Bearwood curse.
The Bearwood
it's not even Bearwood, though.
But it wasn't quite as simple as that, was it?
It's not even Bearwood, though. It goes back to Hogwood. It goes back years. It just keeps happening. It's crazy.
Are you basically blaming the physio department for our decline there, Matt?
Well, something has to be looked at, because it's just getting laughable, isn't it? We're joking about, like what are they doing in training? I think the idea of the fact they're doing the Hunger Games isn't that far off, to be honest, because they drop like flies, and you know, everyone just seems to be dying there, so it's I don't think that's far off, to be honest. Like,
yeah, I'm not sure what's happening at all there, but let's move back to the game. QPR looked the better team for the first 10 minutes 11 minutes and they get their first goal. We're gonna go into the zonal marking now and bring that up. Alex, thoughts on zonal marking? Tick that box. You have to talk about that on every single episode at the moment if you're a Reading FC fan. It's shocking, our defending again, isn't it? You look at either side and there's a player's completely free to head the ball back into the area. What do we do about this?
I don't have a simple answer. I feel like the simple answer from a lot of people listening is probably going to be, let's go man to man, and maybe that would work. Yesterday, though, if you were man to man yesterday, it wouldn't have mattered, because Davies ran around the back of, I think it was Ajaria at the back post, ran around the back of him, and Ajaria didn't know he was there. He's got so much time to head the ball back across and set up a chance. It's just abysmal. And QPR clearly had worked on that as an idea, because they did it multiple times that they overloaded the back post, and Reading didn't seem to ever switch on to it during the game particularly. And I don't think there's an easy answer, except they're going to have to keep working on it, because at the minute we're basically starting games 1-0 down every week because we can't defend set pieces.
Yeah, it's not an ideal scenario at all. After that, QPR have a lot of pressure. They're pushing on both sides of the pitch. It was a real struggle for us. We couldn't really get any control of the match. But just that suddenly, out of the blue, we come alive. John Swift decides that he is going to turn into the best striker in the Championship. A fantastic pass there from Hanovic in the 35th minute. Swift takes it so nicely, though, doesn't he, Matt? He's a man who's looking confident in front of goal.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well be putting him up front at this rate with his strike rate. I think Paunovic said afterwards that you know, he's got the belief that he can, he's got the belief back in his scoring ability and his finishing ability, and it's showing. But I mean, the ball from Haljevic is just stunning. Like the way the weightedness of it. I mean, it was about 40 yards from the right hand side, just curled in, just right into the gap between the two centre backs. And I mean, like you say, the way that Swift takes it down is just stunning. And to be fair, we didn't really have too much up until that point. I mean, Puskas had a snapshot before that was as baffling as anything, I think. but it just gave us a bit of a lifeline. Because, like you say, QPR had just dominated the game up until that point. I think it's not unfair to say that they had control of possession. We couldn't really keep the ball. I think up to that point, it was about 60-65% possession to QPR. But yeah, Swift gave us a lifeline. And I mean, if he can keep doing that, if Halilovic can keep putting balls in like that as well, over the top, I mean, imagine when Zhao's back, he can start thriving off that as well. And, you know, we can hopefully go from strength to strength. But yeah, it was a fantastically worked goal.
Yeah, Halilovic, I thought, was pretty, I wouldn't say amazing yesterday, because he wasn't incredible. But he showed the glimpses that we've heard from Birmingham City fans that he will do moments of brilliance. Later on in the match, he does something that maybe shows why he's not quite made it at the bigger club. So we'll come on to that later. We go into the second half then. It is one hole, and we're thinking, how's this going to go? I was feeling that optimistic at halftime, Alex. I thought QPR could probably step up a few gears here. But Reading just turned it all around, really, didn't they? They just took all the momentum.
Yeah, the first 25 minutes of the second half was probably the best 20 or 25 minutes I've seen us play this season so far. We were really good. We took all the momentum out of the game. QPR just looked like they were completely out of ideas, had no idea how to move the ball forwards. And we went 2-1 up fairly early in the second half. It didn't feel like it was undeserved. We had multiple chances going forwards in that period of time. And obviously John Swift got his second goal. So it was a really good start to the second half. And I don't feel like when we went ahead that it was undeserved in any way particularly.
No, I agree. I'm sure Warburton wasn't particularly happy with that, because according to him, QPR just had everything. We didn't do anything throughout the whole of the game. But when he scores that second goal, John Swift, I'm right in line with that in the Dolan. And it's that magical split second when you can realise the goalie is not going to make it, and it's just slowly going into the goal. I mean, it's not that slow, but it feels really slow. And you just love it when that happens, because so many times you think, oh, that's going wide. But John Swift, Belisher and Tom Delebashura, they kind of link up quite nicely in that middle, don't they, Matt?
Yeah, no, they didn't, especially for that second goal. I mean, lovely little 1-2s and everything. I mean, some of the interplay in the second half was just what was missing in the first half, because it was just slow, it was lethargic, there wasn't much movement. But in the second half, almost, I think Swift again just takes it by the scruff of the neck, really. But yeah, there was really nice interplay. And obviously, Delebashura probably playing his more natural position, being obviously in a bit of a central midfield role rather than being out on the wing. I don't think he had his best game yesterday, but you know, there was moments in there, like in the build up to the second goal, where you know, you start looking and you think there's a good player in there. If they can keep linking up, I mean, the key is to start obviously doing that for the first 45 minutes rather than putting yourself on the back foot like we did, because we were so poor in the first half. You know, like Alex said, it was chalk and cheese. Warburton won't agree, obviously, but it's
do you think it was us being poor, our QPR, as much as we don't want to say this, are actually quite good?
I mean, they are good, but we were awful in that first half. Alex said, you know, we made it look like QPR had run out of ideas in the second half. We looked like we had no ideas in the first half from the get go. You know, it was just so poor. We were trying long balls. We were trying passes, which just go straight to QPR. You know, I mean, I think you got to give a little bit of credit maybe to Paunovic for changing things in the second half. Giving good team talk, I think it'd be unfair not to, because the way it changed around in the second half. I think everyone always asks that, don't they? But I think it was a combination of both, really, being
QPR. Yeah, I think maybe also big factors in QPR got a lot of confidence. Mm. And we've got virtually zero. When we're coming off the back of a 4-0 defeat at Huddersfield, you're never going to feel good after that, are you? The classic thing is to say, no offence, Huddersfield, but no, plenty of offence, because it's basically like losing at Reading 4-0. It's crap, isn't it? Nobody wants to do that right now. But we then get a third goal. And in the third goal, I think, kind of, I don't know what was going on there, with Liam Moore suddenly turning into a left winger, putting in a perfect cross for John Swift. Really nice finish, confident finish. And you're thinking, this is game, not over, but if we don't concede soon, we're all going to be okay here. But Reading FC, they don't fail, do they? They always deliver with heartbreak, Alex. And only 2 minutes later, we concede another sloppy goal.
Yeah, it was great to see John Swift getting his first hat-trick on his left foot, of all things. But it took us, what, 60 seconds, 70 seconds? It felt like it was straight from kickoff, the second goal. And it felt almost like the players had gone, oh, great, 3-1, that's game over, and we don't need to worry about it now. We were having a bit of a discussion before the start of this podcast around kind of what went wrong on that second goal. And the more you watch it back, the more Michael Morrison is so far out of position. He's come across to try and, I'm not honestly quite sure why, but he's come across to try and, I think, to try and stop the man coming forwards from central midfield. And as soon as the ball's played out wide, he's 5 yards ahead of the defensive line. And there's a massive gap for the player to come in and just slide in and tuck it home. And there's definitely a conversation to be had about whether Michael Morrison is going to be a starter going forwards, because that wasn't a one-off this season. There's been multiple times now where Morrison's been caught out of position or made a mistake. I think he's probably, he may not get blamed for the third goal, but there's definitely a portion which you can look at and say, oh, well, it's not great. But the second goal is really, really poor in terms of his positioning. And it's a tap-in for QPR from 6 yards once the ball gets played across from the right-hand side. And then you've got backs to the wall for the last, 15 minutes or so, when in reality, if you managed to see out the next 2 or 3 minutes after we'd gone 3-1 up, it could have been a fairly comfortable victory.
Yeah, it could have been, and maybe it should have been. But talking more about Michael Morrison, I'm not quite sure what's happened there. Maybe it's since the injury that he had at Barnsley, it didn't quite work out, didn't he? Came back maybe too early. Is he the player he was, or is it age, or is he just out of form there, Matt? I'm not sure.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because is he 33, 34? You know, like, I mean, with the experience he has, you don't expect him to be making these mistakes. I think that's one of the fundamental things with the experience he's had and what he was showing really in the last two seasons. You know, he was probably the best defender over the last two seasons that we've had, you know, I think when you look at it. But this season, it's just been like, it's almost like the lights have gone out, you know, it's like, and he's making just simple errors. I mean, basic errors. I mean, like, I don't know if they're being pointed out to him. You'd hope they would by the coaching staff. But I mean, you'd probably hope that he'd be realizing these errors, but they just keep coming back week on week on week. And like you say, I think serious conversations have to be had on whether or not he starts going forwards. You know, Liam Moore's getting a lot of the blame, obviously being the captain. But I think when you look at the two of them, Morrison is just, he's at the moment, he's the one that's making mistake after mistake after mistake. And like, I mean, well, I would have thought if Scott Dan was fit, you know, he'd be coming straight in, or I'd probably be bringing him straight in. But I mean, it's a really, really weird one, because he's been so, so good for us for two seasons. And this season, it's just been almost just chalk and cheese to the last few seasons. I don't know what your thoughts on that were, Alex, but
yeah, so one kind of issue I've got with it is that it's not to do with his pace. It's not to do with the fact that people might say, oh, he's getting older and he's lost a yard. These are like positioning errors, and they're almost mental errors. And the second goal, I feel like it almost comes back to the discussion that we have pre the international break around the fact that the two sitting midfielders are now splitting and going wide. And I feel like Morrison is almost, especially for this second goal, it feels like Morrison feels like he needs to fill the space because no one else is there. And but last season, he wouldn't have had to do that because we had two players sitting in front of him.
For the second goal, Deli Bashir and Tom Laurent are actually, Josh Laurent are actually on the midfielder who's driving forward. He plays out wide. Like there's no reason for Morrison to actually come out because Laurent and Deli Bashir have actually got it relatively under control. Like when you actually look at it, there's no reason for Morrison to be pushing out and lunging out like that. It's an error you'd see from an 18-year-old, not a 34-year-old. You know, that mistake, because there is just no reason for Morrison to come out.
No, basically, I agree. There isn't any reason, is there? And that is a bit of a problem going forward. Now, 2 minutes after this incident of the QPR second goal, we come to George Puskas. I've deliberately left this bit until now because George Puskas has been talked about so much on this podcast. He has a free header in the centre of the goal, I'd say, and there's enough power in it. It's going in the right direction, apart from not the direction of the goal. If he scores that goal, makes it 4-2, the game, well, we'll never know. We never know for certain, but you feel even we couldn't have cocked that up. That would have taken the momentum out of QPR. It's not impossible. We still could have managed to cock it up, but as much as the manager's taking a lot of stick for the substitution of taking him off, yesterday we saw two sides of George Puskas. His hold-up play was a lot better yesterday, his ability to get into position to shoot. But yesterday he showed all the issues that we've got with Puskas in front of goal. He shoots too soon, he shoots too late, or the shot is absolutely awful, or the header is bad. It's like, I'm not quite sure what we're going to get. He needs to score a goal at some point, and maybe it will change because there were some positives and effort was 100% there. But I just don't see him as him scoring many goals in the championship, because there was one point when he actually tried to chip the goalie when through on goal in the second half, and he gets on the end of his own shot. Now, Alex, that's not a good thing, is it?
No. His first touch for that was actually really, really good as well. That was the thing. And it almost looks like he tries to lob the keeper. And you're like, when I was watching it, you just think you're struggling to score clearly. And I get that football players, you know, want to do the impossible, as it were, sometimes. But you've brought the ball down from a really quite tough range. Take a touch. You've got a little bit of time and you can take a decent shot off on goal. And instead he's tried to do the spectacular. As you say, effort-wise, you couldn't fault him yesterday. Really did put himself about. And I actually think he had a reasonable game. But the problem is he had a reasonable game, but in front of goal, he was just bad. There was an air kick from 6 yards, which, you know, he swiped at. The header was poor. The shot in the first half that he took from a really, really tight angle, which was, during the first half, I was at least pleased he took a shot because he hasn't even been doing that in recent weeks. But the decision-making on it was poor. You definitely had more time than that. You could have set yourself up for a much easier chance. It's disappointing because when you've got a player who is so kind of out of form, and you people were criticizing him in terms of his hold-up play, and he's not Lucas Joao and he's not doing the same role. Yes, that's true. But if you get that kind of play from him yesterday outside the box, that's fantastic. But if he's not going to be able to do anything in the box, then it almost doesn't quite make it irrelevant, but it's so difficult to kind of see him succeeding. And I feel like this run of games up until Christmas is going to define the rest of his, you know, probably the rest of his Reading career, and definitely where he ends up next, because it's going to be the longest run of games he gets before he goes to a new club, probably. And at the minute, I don't see him scoring more than 3 or 4 goals before then. I can't see how he's going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, his best bet of scoring at the moment is penalties. He needs a penalty for confidence, and I think he will get some goals at some point, because if he's there long enough, you will get some chances, and he definitely had chances yesterday. But I don't know why. It's just I know people will be listening to this and they'll be saying, yeah, stuff will come indirectly from what he's doing. And I agree, sometimes maybe that will happen. And they'll be saying, oh, he had that great game against Cardiff. He also scored the, I don't know.
We need to get away. We need to get away from this.
As 3 minute hat.
It was two years ago now, or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
I want him to be good, but he's just, I see YC as a player who's absolutely bang average in front of goal. And in fact, they're not even average in the Championship in front of goal. They're below average. And if we had Jao, he'd be ahead of him. We had Mate, he'd be ahead of him. And at the moment, in front of goal, just alone, you'd put Aziz ahead of him. I mean, so you'd probably say he's fourth choice. Now, this is his moment to grasp it. And as a striker, that's what he's going to get judged on, is how many goals he scores. And if he doesn't score goals, the pressure's going to build on him massively and the rest of the team, because as much as they say positive things about him in the press and all those kind of things, do they have any confidence when they feed him a chance? Because at the moment, you wouldn't, Matt.
No, and I think that's a big thing as well, like, to be honest. And to be fair, it's a really difficult one, because like we said at the start, you know, for the strikers, for the attacking players, all of them, like, I think they're probably feeling pressure from behind, because they know that the defense is so poor. But when they've, I mean, I don't know if it is that, to be fair, because we are still scoring, you know, we are still scoring. But, you know, Puskás, it's an odd one, because he is getting chances. I mean, the big one, like you say, was that header. It's poor, but it's just tough to pick Puskás out when there's bigger areas in the team that are the problem. Like,
I think that is one thing to point out. We have scored 10 goals, and Walsh has played up front for the majority of those games. It's not the main area of concern, but certainly, if for him as a person, he's going to have to score goals, right? Otherwise, that's
for his own.
For him and his career, he's going to have to score at some point soon, because otherwise, his career is going to go down the pan very, very quickly.
Yeah, quicker than that Formula One car in the background there. Yeah. George Puskás is not the reason that we didn't win yesterday. There's absolutely no doubt on that. The major problem we didn't win yesterday is because we can't defend. But it's a problem is that he's the striker that we've got. No one's going to come in and replace him at the moment. Maybe we will sign another striker. Who knows? Andy Carroll may come in and play one game. But we just don't know how that's going to work out. So I'm talking about him as an issue, kind of like going forward. I'm definitely not pinning the blame for him yesterday or any of the other games that we've lost on him. That would be a stupid thing to do. So we have got another game coming up very soon, thankfully, I think. I'm not sure. Peterborough
United. Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's a good thing or a bad thing, because that is, it's ridiculously early, but that is a must win for Planovic. He has to win that match, because the pressure on him is building hour by hour, and if we don't win that game, whoa, that's going to be bad news for him. Radio Berkshire is going to be pinging with texts in, isn't it? It's going to be absolutely flying. So, Matt, scoreline for that one?
For Peterborough?
Yeah.
I think we will beat Peterborough. I mean, I think it is a six-pointer, I think. It is a six-pointer. I'd go with the win. I'd go with 2-1. I do think there's enough there to be looking at a win against Peterborough.
Yeah, hopefully. And I've just remembered the trauma of the third goal against us yesterday. It was absolutely horrific. I think I blanked this one out, Alex. You've pointed this out to me. Yeah, that was absolutely crap, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want, I didn't, I didn't want to point it out to you, to be honest, but I feel like it's probably worth reminding people that, yeah, we didn't actually win 3-2. We did end up collapsing. And unfortunately, I feel like this one, again, is probably a Michael Morrison error. Liam Moore has come across to cover the runner. And when you're playing three at the back, you really need your defence to move as one, especially the three centre-backs. And Holmes, Morrison and Yeardom are in the centre of the field. And the phrase to steal from Matt Lansley before the podcast is you could throw a coat over the three of them because they're so close together. And the gap that Morrison and Moore leave between them is ginormous. It's just absolutely ridiculous for the pass to be played into. And once that pass gets played into that gap, I mean, from there, it's almost inevitable. Raphael makes a reasonably good save. And then you've got Johansson on a rebound, which is just, you're never going to stop it. Holmes has been bought on to play five at the back, which I feel like there was definitely some discontent with us going defensive in that final 10 minutes from fans, and people didn't necessarily like the decision. I personally don't mind the decision of us going five at the back. I don't think it's a terrible idea to try and shut the game out, essentially. The issue I've got with it is I don't really buy taking George Puskás off to do it. You end up with no real outlet up front because you put John Swift up there, which John Swift's not going to be able to hold the ball up on his own. And then, before the third goal, we've got the issue of like just naivety from players when we're winning 3-2, someone else can kind of go through. But before QPR even scored, I was already raging at the fact that we just were so kind of, naive to the game state and where we were in the game.
Yeah, I don't know what Halevich was doing. I don't know if people remember this, but maybe about 30 seconds, probably even less than that, before QPR score the third goal. He is quite a lot of space on the right-hand side of the pitch. No, not many red players around him, obviously, because we're trying to see the game out. He could have easily run nearer to the corner flag with the ball. Probably would have given away a throw to QPR. It would have been scrappy, but the whole team would have been in a position then. Instead of playing a crossfield pass that was highly unlikely that a Reading player was going to get on the end of, then moves the whole of the team across, so they're out of position slightly. And I'm surprised the player that's played that many games made that kind of mistake. Players make mistakes. He did have a good game otherwise, but as much as the substitution by Panovich has taken a lot of stick, you've got to say, and I agree with you, Alex, the decision-making by a lot of the players really is not helping him. And the amount of times we were playing 1-2s right outside our own penalty area. And you think sometimes it's not beautiful, but sometimes you just got to hit that ball long, reset, and not let QPR get down the sides, because that's how they were going to score. That's the whole threat. Essentially, we looked okay. It wasn't, if they're going to score from long range, okay, we're always worried about Raphael from long range shots, but they weren't getting many of those away. But who would you bring on there, Matt, in that substitution? Maybe Clark instead?
I think taking off an outlet up front. I mean, like if you're gonna go that defensive, you've got to at least have someone up top that can try and win the ball, win flick-ons, and Swift isn't going to do that. Could Swift do a job up front for a team during a game? Possibly. He's showing he's got the goal scoring ability, but at the end of the game when you need. Or if that was what Pavlovic wanted to do, and it certainly looked like it, just clear every opportunity, lump it forwards. You don't want to be lumping it forward to Swift. You want to be lumping it forward. Even to Puskás, because Puskás did a better job today of hustling the back four. But if you're going to take him off, bring on Clark. It was a very confusing one, but I completely agree with Alex. As much as you're looking at the substitution and the defending, the game management has been seriously poor. You know, that last season was something that certainly in the first half of the season, we were doing relatively well. We were managing games very well. We were seeing games out very well. That slipped away towards the end of the season, and it's just continued this season. I mean, you know, to like everyone's gonna look at it. You know, to throw away a 3-1 lead, even something's not right there. Something's not right with game management. And yeah, like you say, Halevich doing crossfield passes. Even Swift, to be fair, Swift was a little bit criminal of it because he was trying little backheel flicks and stuff. Moore tried a long pass as well.
Yeah, it's all of them, right? Moore had a free kick with 2 minutes left, which he knocked 30 yards forwards. Deli Bashiru and Laurent Traoré 1-2s outside the area. Halevich trying a 40-yard crossfield pass. It's 3 minutes left of the game, lads. Just see it out. Put it in the corner. Like, that was the most infuriating thing. Yeah. Yes, we conceded, which is way worse. But come on. Like, you're all professional footballers. Let's see some actual... You know, a little bit of just intelligence on the football field there would have been delightful.
Do you think we saw maybe a little bit of panic there from players mentally? It was kind of, they were trying to keep it cool, but actually they were trying to keep it too calm when actually you need to go into a different mode. It's easy to say we're sat here or sat in the stands. You're not involved in 19 minutes of running around and the pressure that comes with that. Afterwards, because they know if they concede that third goal, I mean, as bad as the third goal was, and that was bad, if QPR had won it right at the end with that chance, that would have ruined Christmas, Easter, all bank holidays, Ren Festival for the rest of my life.
Fold the club, literally. Get it all done. a lot of it, though, it comes down to the run that we're on. You know, the run that we're on, we're on such a poor run of form. I think that's... It's going to happen with players. It's going to happen with the team. They need a break. They needed somewhere where they'd have to be able to, you know, cut to see that game out. They didn't. Hopefully they'll move forward from here, but we'll have to see.
Great. So thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back with a pod after the match against Peterborough United. Hopefully I'll do a better job. So yeah, it is a massive must be. I don't want to go through it again though, because these things can go on forever. So hopefully I'll do a better job of hosting this podcast next time, being a bit shambolic, I must say. But we'll also be back with a preview pod with Matt Williamson that will be coming out on Friday for our game against Fulham, which I'm already massively concerned by. I don't think that's going to end well. So cheers. Thanks a lot for listening.